Welcome back to WordBalloon.com, the counterculture conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today we visit with writer Brian Azzarello to talk about Loveless, the Vertigo Western series he started this year with artist Marcello Frusen, and his new projects debuting this fall, a return to the Wildstorm character Deathblow, first tackled by Brian in the 2003 Batman crossover story with returning artist Lieber Mayo. We'll also discuss Brian's reboot of Dr. 13 in DC's Tales of the Unexpected, a new monthly series he shares with fellow crime writer David Lappin. Brian is at the three-quarter point in his crime conspiracy epic, 100 Bullets. So in the second half of the show, we'll replay our 2004 conversation with Brian covering the behind-the-scenes facts of the series. I wanted to talk about Loveless.
Okay.
It's funny because at first I almost felt that, like, DC missed an opportunity getting, you know, a Deadwood style, you know, really a direct adaptation of Deadwood as a comic book. But it seems like you can go a lot further, and obviously with it being your own original characters, you know, you're taking full advantage and, you know, are doing a really good raw Western.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, the comparisons to Deadwood, I'll take them. I don't particularly see it other than the hats and the horses. But, you know, for people to be able to get their head around a Western, and that's where they're starting, good.
Well, and I think it's cool, too, that you guys, and then you got Palmiotti and Justin Gray and the artist Jonah Hicks, they're very different Westerns. His is edgy in a different way. I mean, you get to go balls out, obviously, it being a Vertigo title, and it's always nice to see Naked Ruth. We're seeing the same kind of raw storytelling that we saw in 100 Bullets in Loveless, and that's nice to see that it looks like, you know, there's no boundaries in terms of where you can't go.
No, not yet. There isn't anyone.
Has Levitz commented? I know you've said before that Paul Levitz, the publisher of DC, says 100 Bullets is one of his favorite books, and I've heard him say it a few times at conventions as well. What's his response been about Loveless?
You know, I haven't talked to him about it at all, so I have no idea. Regular DC proper right now, they're too busy with their crossovers to even pay attention to anything that we're doing in Vertigo, which is great.
Well, what about Karen Berger's feedback?
Karen loves it.
Cool.
Yeah, but, you know, if she was to say anything else, I'd be surprised. She's got to say something.
I think Marcello Frusen is really cool, and I wonder, was it ever a conscious move to get an Italian artist? Because, you know, it's funny.
He's Argentinian.
Oh, is he Argentinian? Yeah. There you go. See? Okay, never mind.
I'll
leave that in then.
There's an artist who's going to be doing some fill-ins. I think it's Walter Deladera. He's Italian. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. you know.
And then Daniel's Croatian. So.
Was there a specific look you were going for, or was it just gut level of just seeing a bunch of different artists and saying that's the one?
I think if I can react to somebody's work on a real visceral level, especially for a project like this, where, you know, there's a need for it to be subtle, like in most of the things that I write. There's also a real sort of, you need to feel some of the wickedness in this book.
Have you found an artist, an American artist, that can match the intensity of guys like Frusen and Eduardo Risso? Have you seen anybody like that in America, that style?
That I've worked with?
Yeah, or I mean, and I'm not saying that they haven't done a good job for you, but I'm just saying there's just something about a lot of these international artists that they really do have a different head when it comes to drawing a page.
Well, I think they're more than American artists. They're concerned with storytelling, you know? That the splash is not the most important thing, you know, in the book. You know, visually telling a story to a lot of these guys is much more important. I mean, I think their storytelling is very, very clear.
Have you had an opportunity to talk to them about?
I've talked to every one of them.
Well, but but about their actual, you know, whatever their process is in terms of laying out pages and stuff.
No, not really. I know Eduardo doesn't do thumbnails.
Wow.
He just goes right to the page.
That's really cool.
You know, the guy's a pro.
And, you know, I'd love to talk in detail about 100 Bullets, but I don't want to screw anyone who hasn't been following, and it's really getting intense. And, in fact, I even read your interview at Newsarama with Vanetta Rogers, and you said for the upcoming arc, you're sorry for what's going to happen.
Yeah, well.
So I just recommend anyone who hasn't, like, started with Trade 1 to, by all means, do it. with 25 issues to go, it's the story just keeps jerking around, and it's been really fun following it, man. You know, you said that obviously the core of the story is well thought out, but there was wiggle room when we talked around 50 and stuff. Have you taken turns that you surprised yourself in terms of where some of the story frames have taken you?
Not really. No, I've been pretty close, I'd say, since issue 50. You know, there's a few places, nothing that springs to mind immediately, though.
Okay, and is it still, you know, a pleasure to write, or is it, you know, sometimes when you have something thought out, then it becomes a chore of really getting it down on paper.
It's not that well thought out.
You okay.
You know, I didn't, you know, like I said, the outline's loose, so, yeah, it's still, you know, it's still very exciting to write. I still love writing that book.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm gonna miss that book.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and as you said, when you're going to look back and it's going to be a novel, and already it's, you know, there with Sandman and Preacher and I think the classic Vertigo runs and everything. And that, it's so great that Vertigo allows, you know, the trades to come out as often as they do. And I think they've done a really good job in a lot of ways that other publishers haven't, to really appreciate the value of the bookstore revenue that's going to eventually come, you know, no matter how the monthly performs.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think... Well, I know that if a lot of books at Vertigo had to rely just on their monthly sales, they wouldn't be around anymore.
You bet.
You know, but the trades keep a lot of those things alive, which is great, you know.
Sure. Is it going to be when you get done that you're just going to kind of step away from that kind of storytelling? I don't mean that specific universe, or is it just, no, you'll find another, you know. You've got a million stories, and you're just going to keep chugging along.
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, that's... Really finish it first, all
right? Yeah, that's, that's 2 years away. You're right. You got stuff coming up that I'm really curious about. Deathblow for Wildstorm. And I enjoyed your Batman crossover with, was it Lee Bermejo?
Yeah.
Great miniseries, and I really enjoyed that trade. Is, you know, the Wildstorm... characters always had, you know, have a superheroic undertone. Is this going to be more of a grounded series, or will it still have that superhero side to it? Or neither.
Jesus, I don't know. It'll have as it'll have as much of a superhero side as any of the other superhero stuff I've ever done, I suppose. Which
okay.
isn't a lot. Huh?
No, it isn't. No, exactly. And that's why I was wondering, like, comparing it to the miniseries and stuff, where it really was a cool street level, you know, Black Ops story.
Yeah, there's not going to be much. I mean, like, the rest of the characters from Wildstorm aren't going to be appearing in this, you know, as far as I know.
Okay, well, you would know.
Yeah, I would think.
I guess, yeah, it starts off in the Middle East, so that's cool. I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, that kind of realism in the series.
We'll see. I'm not promising you anything.
No problem. What can you tell me about the artist that's on the project?
Carlos Danda?
Yes.
He's done, I think he did some Outsiders for DC. He's a Wildstorm guy. He's got a real kind of brawny style to his work that I think meshed really well with the character. And he was a big, you know, big fan of the character, he told me. When back in the, I don't know, what was it, the 90s and that?
Sure.
Yeah.
See, and I didn't read much of that stuff other than, honestly, your miniseries. So, yeah, I'm curious. I guess Deathblow died in some big crossover around 1999 or whatever, and obviously, you know, that's part of the story now, is to find out exactly what happened to him.
No, it's not.
All right, good.
No, who cares? This is comics. Everybody comes back from the dead in comics.
All right. I love when you snarl. That's
you
good.
Well, fucking Bucky's been dead for how long? Jesus Christ. I mean, it's like whatever whatever. Don't even get me started.
Good. That's good. Was this your pitch? I mean, is this a character you wanted to get back to after that miniseries?
Not really. No, Jim asked me.
If you had any ideas?
Yeah, to do it.
Okay.
So at least if I can think of something. I sent in a pitch to Ben Abernathy, was the editor at the time. And he'd got one over it, and... they were too thrilled with the direction, which is, should give you pause right now, I suppose. Jim read it, though, and said, this is exactly what I want to do with this character. This is great. This is new. It's fresh. Nobody will expect this. I would think, so here we are.
Okay. I would think with, like, companies like Wildstorm and the characters that they have, I would think that they are kind of like anything goes because of the era that they came from. And I think some of, like, you know, look at the changes in some of these other characters, like Grifter and things that Brubaker did with Grifter, like in Sleeper and things like that, where, you know, I think, you know, you could really, like, you know, if you wanted to, like, kind of pick other guys in the Wildstorm universe, you could really drag them through the mud if you want to.
Well, I'm happy dragging this one guy through.
And then I wanted to ask about Tales of the Unexpected as well. You got the Dr. 13 story. Now, is each part of this story going to be 16 pages?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's a nice double-sized magazine then, because the lead story is like a 22-page story.
Is it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. So a nice, fat little comic for you, huh?
There you go. So, again, are we forget everything we ever knew about Dr. 13 in the past?
What do you know about Dr. 13?
Well, I did my research, and I know that Leonard Starr used to draw him, and that's the same guy who drew Little Orphan Annie for a while.
Yeah, but you only found that out when you went to look for it.
Very true.
You knew nothing about this character.
Well, what about the... Now, actually, right? Didn't Grant just use him in Zatanna?
Somebody told me that. Yeah, I haven't read it.
But okay.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's okay.
No, I don't... You know, like I said, personally, I don't care. I mean, that's fine, but I obviously the question is going to come up, because especially considering it was in Zatanna and that was just a year or two ago.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, it just gives the continuity hound something else to bitch about. You know?
Attaboy.
That's what they look for anyway.
Sure.
They look for error.
Well, we don't care about that. All we want are good stories.
Well,
that's fine.
You know, I think you'll get a good story.
I look forward to it, man. No, and it's and I heard you mention too that iVampire is going to be in there. That's going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I remember that character. I didn't have to look up iVampire.
Well, you know, his name says it all.
Well, there, and I never realized that there was such a close connection. Forgive me, to Angel.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah. Well.
Or at least, again, that's what he was. Who's to say what he's going to be?
Yeah. He's a vampire.
Has it been fun, like, finding weird characters from the Silver Age and from the Bronze Age or whenever era to bring back in this series coming up?
Yeah, it has. It's also been fun to be able to play with characters that nobody cares about.
Sure.
You know, I mean, right now what's going on in the DCU is, you know, they're consolidating, they're getting, you know, the reset button, I guess, has been punched, you know?
Yes.
Things are getting cleaned up and these, you know, characters are being redefined. And I took my list of characters to Dan and said, these are the ones I want to use. He looked at them and said, why? And I said, exactly, because you don't want them. And that's... here we are.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity to kind of try something new with them and see if there's any life to, you know.
Yeah, nobody gives a rat's ass about these characters.
No.
There, anyway. They don't. I mean, these are, you know, here we are, they're reshaping the universe, and there's nothing for these guys.
Sure. Everyone you had on your list was fine? There was no rejects in terms of now you can't use them?
Gentleman Ghost was the only one.
Which is also going to be in the book.
Yeah, but it's different from what I was going to do.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Gentleman Ghost was the one that said, no, you can't do that with him.
And he was just in the JSA story, too, that Levitz wrote.
That's why.
There you go.
Because Paul wanted to use him.
Okay.
So, you know, hey, Paul, you want to use Gentleman Ghost? Sure, go right ahead.
That's cool.
There's plenty of other ghosts lurking around.
Yeah, I mean, even Bill Willingham in a couple of those... Crisis tie-ins, he would just, you know, you saw guys that, yeah, I remember that first issue special of, you know, the three ghosts. I can't even remember what the hell their names were, but they were all the World War One aces or whatever.
Oh, there was...
you know what I'm talking about?
They're French, right?
Yeah, I think like one was... It's almost like the Blackhawks. I want to say one was French, one was German, one was British. I don't know. I don't even know.
Were you a Tales of the Unexpected reader?
What was in that?
Well, those were all...
That answers your question.
Those are all the horror anthologies and everything.
Yeah, that was the yeah, it had like little short sort of like horror stories in it, right?
Right,
yeah, exactly. I read that stuff.
You know, that whole period, I think, the Joe Orlando books at DC in those early to mid-70s were kind of really cool. I mean, you had The Shadow, you had O'Neill and Kaluta doing The Shadow, and even that Justice Incorporated that Kirby did for a while for the Avenger and all the sword and sandal stuff. That's when Warlord came.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, you had House of Secrets and Tales of the Unexpected.
Yeah, I read those. Those were, I like the monster books and the war books.
You know, there's an area that I know you did that great story with Kubert, Rockin' a Hard Place for Sergeant Rock.
Yeah, Hell in a Hard Place.
Thank you, to Hell in a Hard Place. I noticed DiDio said that, you know, war is something that they haven't done really since you and then also Garth's great series for Vertigo, that war stories thing. Is that something you've thought about pitching to either DC proper or a new series for Vertigo or somebody, or Wildstorm for that matter?
What, war?
Yeah.
Loveless is about war.
True.
Deathblow is going to be about war. So my war bases are pretty covered.
That's cool.
You know.
Let's talk about both of those. Now, Deathblow, I really enjoyed Diggle's Loser series.
Mm-hmm.
And is it going to be that kind of international, you know?
No, it has a sense of humor.
All right. More tongue in cheek.
Yeah, that's the way I'm taking it.
Okay.
I'm not saying Andy's book was dour or humorous or anything like that. I'm saying this. It's a completely different approach.
Okay.
It's going to be a very black comedy.
As far as Loveless, I'm glad you brought that up because I do think the politics of the series are really interesting, and both from a local standpoint. And also just even the idea of, you know, the Union coming in and taking Cutter's land and just, you know, his motivation and everything. And, you know, I mean, he's an asshole, but there's some real reasons behind this. A lot of times we look back at history, we get the black and white facts, but there's a gray area there where, you know, no, he wasn't a slave owner. He lost his land, though, because the Union just kind of took over the land.
Well, the slave owners, you know, the people who own the plantations, they at first, you know, they lost their land, but then their land was given back to them. You know? Money wins all the time.
Yep. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about a couple old series, if you don't mind. Like Lex Luthor, Man of Steel, not that old. But I really enjoyed the way that turned out. What did you think at the end? Were you pleased with the story?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
The one issue that stands out for me was the lunch with Bruce Wayne. Just because I thought you had a really cool, real moment between characters that, you know, you don't normally see those two guys interacting in that way, and it was just really kind of fun watching the subtext as they were enjoying their lunch.
Yeah, well, I wanted to play Bruce like the millionaire playboy that I don't even think he is anymore.
Sure.
In the regular book. I wanted to just play him like, you know, that. He's kind of a, you know, he's a rich guy with not a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and just Luther just kind of dismissing him and even just kind of taking stock of him as they're eating, and just what a waste of, you know, resource.
Yeah. Just to play him, so, because I think, you know, maybe for the past 20 years, I think the personality of Bruce and Batman have been a little bit too close, you know? You know, it really shouldn't take a rocket science to figure out, wait a minute, that Bruce Wayne guy, he acts just like Batman.
Sure.
So I just wanted to, you know, switch it up a little bit. I thought it worked out.
No, I thought that was really cool. And also another older story that I wanted to ask about was a Marvel story that you did. And that Tangled Web story you did about Crusher Hogan, the wrestling story.
Yeah, yeah.
You give him more than the 3 pages I think Leon Ditko did back in 61.
It was 3 panels. Really, it was.
Well, and a much more interesting character than Bonesaw was in the Spider-Man Sam Raimi movie, too.
Yeah, you know.
Have you had much contact with the wrestling world like that, especially at that level, too?
Me? Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know guys in Chicago and everything that wrestle, or even back in Cleveland or whatever?
I know more like national guys than local.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, a local guy that he's now national is CM Punk, but he's on he's in ECW right now.
Oh, okay.
He was in Ring of Honor for a long time.
Okay.
He's a really great independent wrestler. Well, like probably the best. Just awesome.
I thought it was cool that, you know, you really did show how, and growing up in Chicago, you know, there was always a healthy local wrestling market, especially when I grew up in the 60s and 70s. And obviously, everything was local back then.
I mean, that's the way I played that, too. I mean, like, you know, you do those old, that old school kind of promotion.
Yes.
Yeah, like when I was in Cleveland, yeah, you know, once a month they'd show up at the arena.
Sure.
You know.
Were they on local TV, too? Did Cleveland have local?
Yeah. I don't think we had a local promotion. Well, no, yes, we did. It might have been the one out of Detroit. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But
yeah, Detroit had a healthy one too. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, a lot of guys came out of Detroit. But yeah, I would watch it every week. Occasionally, we get to go down to the arena, sit in a folding chair.
Sure. I wanted to ask you too about getting back to Loveless and everything. We, you know, we had a good conversation about different crime movies and stuff. What westerns, if any, other than, you know, well, what westerns, if any, actually influenced thoughts about Loveless or just your feelings about westerns?
Just spaghetti westerns.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see that IFC documentary they just did like a couple, like maybe it was about last summer now that I think about it?
No, I didn't.
All about the spaghetti westerns. It was just, you know, not only Leon, but really some of these other guys that came along. Or that blonde actor, Joe, and I can't remember his last name, who was like kind of the last Italian, like, western hero. Real blonde, just like crazy good looks, and he was in that 3D movie. Remember Coming At You? Remember that bad Italian western?
No, I don't.
Really? The 3D western? Well, who are your guys other than Leon?
Well, I mean, I like Corbucci a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Salima. God. I get hit with these questions. I should just have a list sitting on my desk here. I always go through this, you know, I can't ever think of at the time. Next question. Sorry.
No, that's okay. What about Italian comic westerns? And then I think that's why I
thought.
Which of course.
Comic that's in Italy?
Yeah, and did you read that Kubert collection of Tex?
Yeah. I didn't read it. I have it.
Fantastic. Outstanding. But yeah, Tex is really wild. I've gotten several of those. Or how about the French ones? What do you think of. You know, is Lieutenant Blueberry technically a Western?
It's about as much of a Western as Loveless is.
Yeah, I suppose
you know,
so, actually.
You put the hat and have him ride a horse, and everybody says it's a Western.
That's true. What do you think of Lieutenant Blueberry?
I like that stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's really cool. The movie was weird. I don't know if you saw that.
I did, after talking to Jeff Darrow. I hadn't seen it until just, like, about a year and a half ago, and it was weird and very disappointing. Because it's a pretty basic idea that really worked for years,
yeah,
and still does. I don't know. Does he do? Does Mobius still do anything new of Lieutenant Blueberry?
God, I don't think so.
No, I think that's it. I was the only other thing I was going to ask is what movies have you seen lately?
What have I seen lately?
Yeah. What did you like?
That I've liked. God.
Did you see Crank?
No.
Go see Crank.
Yeah.
Excellent. Jason Statham, very good in it.
Okay. Yeah, the last thing I saw at the theater was Nacho Libre. Back to wrestling, man.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, like, my comedy Mendoza line is Dodgeball, where I think Dodgeball is okay on cable. I'm kind of pissed they spent $10 to see it in the theater.
Did you like Napoleon Dynamite?
I did.
Okay, if you like that kind of...
weird kind of humor?
Yes. It's, you know, it's because it's the same guys made it.
Right, I know that. Right.
You know, it might have been better if it was Napoleon and Pedro go to Mexico and become luchadors.
Okay.
Which is really what they should be doing. Just, like, franchise those guys
Like Jay and Silent Bob?
No, I mean successfully franchise them, like Abbott and Costello. You know, like Napoleon and Pedro meet the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and all that stuff. The Keystone Cops and Dracula.
I saw this. I know what you're talking about. Pedro's in Crank.
Yeah.
He's very good in Crank. I'm recommending Crank to you.
I guess so.
That and also Mike Judge's film, Idiocracy. I'm really glad I saw that before it disappears this week.
Oh, I haven't seen that either. No.
You're a sports fan. You went to the World Championships of Baseball.
Yes, I did.
That was cool. What teams did you end up seeing?
I ended up seeing USA, South Africa, Mexico, and Canada.
Very cool.
Yeah. Mexican fans are the best.
Wasn't it great seeing, like, the international fans just going nuts for baseball? I mean, it's like...
Well, the Canadians really didn't go so nuts. But maybe they did. They didn't seem to me like they were going nuts, but maybe they were just... That was...
Their idea of intensity.
That crazy for a Canadian.
If it was curling, they would have been out of their chairs.
Yeah.
Is baseball your favorite sport? Which is your favorite sport?
Probably. Well, God, it depends.
I mean, certainly right now, football, of course.
Yeah, well, you know, that'll wear off.
Well, at least the weather's shitty. I always feel bad in September with football because when it's really nice out, especially when I was working at the Score and having to watch the Bears during those crappy Wanstead years, I'd like, you know, everyone's like outside and it's 80 degrees on Sunday and a beautiful September, you know, sunny day, and I'm stuck watching the Bears suck. So hopefully not this year.
No, you know, I mean, I don't know what, my jury's still out on what happened on Sunday.
For me. You're not alone, man.
You know, I don't know if, are the Bears that good or is it just the Packers are really that bad?
Well, I think regardless, unfortunately, the Packers are really that bad. And I'm a Bears fan, so I really don't care. But I feel bad for Favre just because, like, what a lousy way to, you know, for that kind of Hall of Fame career to go out.
Hey, it's his choice.
Well, yeah.
He could have retired.
That's true. And obviously he's damaged enough that nobody else seemed to want him, or I don't know if the Packers came up with the right, you know, right money at the end. I'm not really sure.
There's probably 20 teams in the NFL he could start for. I'd take them right here.
So no love for the Browns anymore? Or you got
room
for both?
Oh, yeah. I watched the Clowns the other day before I watched the Bears.
Now, for basketball, what do you do? Because the Bulls are sucking, but the Cavaliers aren't bad.
Well, that's why I've got the, you know.
You got them on the dish?
Yeah.
Attaboy. There you go.
Actually, this past year I was over in Europe for the beginning of the World Cup.
Okay.
And never really followed soccer. I mean, football. I got to get over that. Until this year's World Cup, because I was over there. And I was in Italy for a while and then in Spain. And, you know, it's a pretty big deal.
Sure.
And I got bit.
Wow.
So now I'm into football.
Who's your team?
I'm still trying to figure that one out right now because I'm watching the English Premier League.
Okay.
You know, it's the team I see the most and the team that like looks like it's the best and it, I like the personality of the team is Man U.
Okay.
But that's like.
Like the Yankees?
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like my Italian, you know, I'm talking to my Italian friend, and he's telling me, oh, I'm getting into baseball. Yeah? What team do you like? Oh, I like the Yankees. You asshole.
Sure. Yeah, it's too easy.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see. West Ham, I mean, I liked what West Ham just did, signing a couple Argentine guys. So maybe they'll, you know, the season just started, so I'm going to have time to figure out. But I'm really liking it.
Any Spanish? Have you looked at the Spanish leagues or the Italian leagues?
Serie A just started this past weekend, so I've watched a couple of games. Again, it's like I don't know enough about these teams, and plus the Italian league's completely decimated after that scandal.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Is that I would think the Italian leagues are almost fun to watch just from the soap opera of it. But you're right. I guess all the good players got cleaned out then.
Oh yeah. I mean, anybody who's playing for Juventus is gone. You know, anybody good. They went and signed somewhere else.
Brian, it was great talking to you. I'm looking forward to everything that's coming out. We got Deathblow coming up, Tales of the Unexpected.
Yeah, I think those are both out in October.
Very cool.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And continued success with Loveless and really enjoying that. Is there a plan as far as like how long Loveless will go or is it just how long it's going to take you?
The plan is somewhere in between 40 and 50 issues.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very cool. And 25 to go for 100 bullets. And when 100 bullets does wrap up, I hope you will come back and we'll really get to do a let's look at the whole series because I don't want to spoil for people.
Oh, well, it's so much easier to talk about things like that. Anyway.
I have a feeling, though, when I do, you're going to be like, oh, dude, I'm so sick of that. I don't even want to deal with it.
I don't know. that's my firstborn.
Good. I'm glad you feel that way, man. And my best to Jill. Hey, real fast, I did want to ask. Do you guys ever envision doing stuff together?
No, it's like we don't want to cross revenue streams.
It's always good to talk to you, and I appreciate you putting up with my nonsense today.
Not that much nonsense. I've been interviewed by worse.
Thank you.
A good conversation with Brian Azzarello, recorded right after week one of the NFL season.
for you sports fans out there. And for you non-sports fans out there who are saying, why'd you waste so much time talking about sports and not enough about 100 Bullets? Like I said, I didn't want to spoil the story with it being three-quarters of the way done for those who haven't had the opportunity to read 100 Bullets before. And for those who haven't had the opportunity to hear my first interview with Brian, where we spent a lot of time on the behind-the-scenes facts of 100 Bullets, I'd like to now represent that interview that came from December of 2004.
I moved to Chicago 15 years ago with a woman, and it lasted about 6 months, but I stuck around.
Was there an appeal about the city and its history? Did that figure into it at all? Or?
I guess, you know, being from Cleveland, Midwestern sensibilities, you know. Plus, you know, at the time, I didn't really have a lot of money, and it's like L.A., New York, Chicago. It's like, Chicago, you know, it's more affordable.
Proximity.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, certainly.
You know, nothing, no sort of epiphany when I moved here.
Were you interested in the Chicago crime history when you came here, or did you find yourself falling into that?
Oh, yeah, you know. Well, like anybody else, I mean, Chicago's Al Capone, till Michael Jordan. Now Chicago's Michael Jordan.
You started as an artist.
Yeah.
Did reading pulps or anything kind of lead you into the type of writing? And did, say, maybe the pulp covers or that kind of art that's associated with, you know, gritty crime?
Sure. Yeah, in some regard. Like, my paintings were always very narrative-based. You know, there was a story, and usually it was not a good one. You know?
What do you think influenced these crime stories? What do you think led you to crime rather than, you know, romance?
God, because crime is sexier than romance. That's for, you know, that's for sure.
Do you have any thoughts on some of the authors from Chicago? Guys like, I saw in an interview you mentioned Hemingway.
As a big
influence.
Oh, yeah, Hemingway's a huge influence on me. Yeah.
It's ironic because Hemingway's a guy that couldn't wait to get out of Cicero in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, get me a nice house down in the Keys and I'm there too. Yeah, Hemingway, Nelson Algren, you know, of course. He's probably the pinnacle as far as, you know, Chicago sort of underworld crime stuff. I think he's, you know, the greatest.
So you read, obviously, now with Golden Arm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
City
on the Make, sure, sure.
Is there something in his narrative that, you know?
Reality. You know, there's a real sort of reality. But it's also, you know, I think Algren's got a real sort of street poetry, you know, to his prose. He writes about disenfranchised and, you know, less fortunate people. And you can't write about that, you know, particular part of society without considering the, you know, criminal aspect that goes along with it. If you don't have money, you might try and steal money to get it.
Do you have any, in following the real Capone story, the Nitty story, really the whole Chicago crime story and stuff, did you study that history? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Once I moved here, it's like, you know, I really wanted to learn about the city, and it was hard to learn about this town without learning about its corruption. I mean, it's so part of the fabric of it, you know?
As someone who has moved here, how do you think people from Chicago acknowledge this history? Are they embarrassed by it? Are they, hey, you know, that's the place where...
It's definitely romanticized. Yeah.
We're proud of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a certain, you know, it's nostalgic, you know. It's not looked at as violent without sort of, you know, silly violence where there's no blood.
The conversation turned to Brian's collaboration with artist Eduardo Risso. Their first work together was for Vertigo in 1998, a four-part miniseries, Johnny Double.
Johnny Double happened. I was working with an editor at DC, Axel Alonso, and he was trying to resurrect an old character called Human Target. And he sent me that. He also sent me this one-off, Johnny Double, that came out in 1968, one issue, because he said that the Human Target, there was another writer who had a much higher profile than mine who was interested in doing it. So you really don't have a chance, but here, try this one. And it turned out Johnny Double appealed to me more than Human Target anyway, because Johnny Double was a private eye who just sucked at it.
And that was your first credit with Eduardo Risso.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the first time Eduardo and I partnered up.
Had you heard of him, or were you aware of his work prior to work?
I was not aware of Eduardo's work till Axel sent me a couple sample pages through the fax machine of when we were looking for an artist for Johnny Double. He was going to send me three artists. Eduardo's pages were the first ones that come through. I just didn't even see the other two. I picked up the phone and said, no, this is the guy. We don't need to even look at anybody else.
And he is based in South America.
Yeah, he's in Argentina.
How much contact have you guys had? Like direct contact with the two of you?
Direct, face-to-face,
or
about once a year.
Once a year?
Yeah.
And it's been going for 5 years?
Yeah. You know, the internet now, I mean, the world's a much smaller place.
No language barriers, obviously. You get to what you're, you know, going for.
We have a translator. Yeah.
The bosses at DC like what they saw in Johnny Double and greenlit Brian's next project with Eduardo Risso, 100 Bullets.
A mysterious individual approaches you and gives you a briefcase full of 100 rounds of ammunition, a gun, and a picture of somebody that ruined your life. And he tells you you can get away with doing whatever you want to this person. That's the piece of crack. But that's not what the book's about.
It's a unique story device, obviously. It sets up an environment where you can kind of plug in any protagonist, obviously.
Yeah, well, I set it up that way to keep it interesting for myself. I mean, working on one character for an extended period of time, just not something that I want to get into.
You kind of have the best of both worlds because it's like an anthology, but it has the undercurrent of the conspiracy and the...
Yeah, a bunch of ongoing characters, you know, that I can go away for a year, I could bring back, you know, when I feel like writing them again.
Was, with DC, was it the gimmick of the...
The gimmick? The guy...
The, you know, the, yeah, the or the device of...
Oh, God, yeah, it was the gimmick, of course. It was the crack.
I read an interview where you said that the first arc of 100 Bullets, when, and I think it was in Comic Book Resources, and they asked where it came from, and you're like, it came from my life. Do you find yourself as a writer listening to conversations? Are you an observer of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you have to be, you know. You got to, you know, especially like in comics, you're writing so much dialogue that you really got to listen. I mean, you got to listen to the way people speak. It's important to get that sort of street pattern, you know, poetry. Listen to what I mean, not to what I say, kind of thing going on.
Are there areas of the city where the talk is?
God, just get on a bus.
Any CTA bus?
You get on any CTA bus. If there's a high school on the line, you know, all the better. But get on any CTA bus.
The bars.
Bars work too. Right. Take the bus to the bar.
Do all the stories start with you? Does Eduardo contribute to far story ideas initially as far as plot, or?
No, it does all come through me. He contributes a lot, you know, on the back end and stuff, but because my scripts are really open, you know, I give him a lot of room to, you know, sort of improvise and stuff.
Character descriptions.
Oh, yeah. Character descriptions, you know, some of the background characters, what's going on, that kind of stuff, you know. I'll just basically set up the scene for him, and, you know, he can take it from there.
I'm sure all the stories are your babies, but do any stand out as far as what's been released so far from the arcs within 100 days?
You know, it's cliche, it's true, the last thing I did. You know, it just it keeps...
Is that the current, the New Orleans?
Right, yeah, right now the New Orleans one is pretty, that's my favorite. Before that, it was the issue 50, I thought was pretty damn good. Yeah. That happened up with Broadway and Lawrence. So.
I liked the Counterfeit Detective as well.
Yeah, you know, when I finished that, that was my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Protagonist and everything. Wasn't it Dark Victory?
Yeah. It had a feel of a lot of things to it. I mean, I threw in a lot of different influences in that particular story arc, you know.
Is there I'm sure you get your ideas from a lot of sources, but are there specific noir, you know, kind of touchstones for you that you...
Yeah, the Metro section of the newspaper. That's the best place to get any story, because all it does is give you the ending. You know, you really don't get how these people got into this situation. But you work your way back out as a writer.
And that's how you start? You start with your ending? Right?
If I don't have... Oh, yeah. If for every story, I have my ending before I start.
What were you going to say instead of I don't have?
If I have, like, if I'm lost, you know, like, you know, with a story, you know, what am I going to do next? I invariably I'll find it in the newspaper.
How does 100 Bullets play internationally?
We do very well in Europe too. The book is translated into I think nearly 10 different languages right now. I think we've won we won best series in Italy a few years ago. I think we last year we won something in Poland. We've won some British awards too. You know, Eduardo's a European, you know, he lives in Argentina, but he's more of a European artist, you know. He comes from that tradition than an American artist.
At this point, we had to switch out tapes for the video camera and got into a conversation about European crime comics. One of the crew mentioned Black Sad, the Juan Canales, Juan Yoguardino animal-populated noir story.
That's a book I got asked to rewrite, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do you think they wanted... Just for another audience, or
they liked the art, they didn't like the story.
The dialogue.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you work on anything?
No, I told them no.
No, they didn't want to
touch it. No, you know, that seemed
too much of a mess.
Disrespectful to the guy who wrote it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, yeah. I said, you know, so it's a little dry and a little, you know,
yeah.
You know, comic booky at some points. You know, they wanted me to sort of, you know, grit it up, make it more like my stuff. And
sure.
It's like, nah, that's not what his intentions were.
In the pursuit of covering the subject of Chicago crime fiction, I started asking Brian about a lot of Chicago-based films shot in Chicago, based around Chicago, featuring Chicago actors. And Brian liked them, but they really didn't seem to be among his favorite crime films. So I asked him to come up with a list of some of his favorites.
Rafifi, which is a French film. Bob Le Flambeur, which is a French film. Samurai, which is a French film. I mean, the whole, you know, the real noir tradition is something that I...
So America through the lens of the Europeans and through the French, primarily.
Right.
That appeal to you.
Yeah.
The Godard kind of breathless.
Sure, yeah, yeah, that kind of...
The new wave.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I mean, the way that's worked, you know, it came from here, it went there, got sort of messed with a little, came back, you know. And that made no sense at all. Sorry.
No, that's fine. You want to expound on that in any way, you know?
Well, I mean, like, noir is, it's a French tradition before, or a French filmmaking tradition that has been co-opted by Hollywood and a lot of other different, you know, there's quite a number of English films that also sort of, you know, took cues from that. But it seemed to be a French tradition that was being created out of American film. One of the archetypes that were being created, I think, at the time.
The subject changed again, and Brian and I started talking about television shows that had a Chicago-based theme. We started with an obscure show. It only lasted a season, but very significantly, it was about the early 60s in Chicago, Michael Mann's Crime Story.
They ruined Crime Story when they moved it to Vegas.
That first season was great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And pretty real as well.
Yeah.
Did you know the real story about the police?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But then, I don't know what got into them.
Probably
a
network.
Yeah.
About Hill Street Blues.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
More about the criminals for you rather than the police?
Yeah, I thought Hill Street Blues was like a, you know, it was a cop soap opera. pretty much, you know.
And obviously it's the criminal life that it really obviously appeals to you more. Or just those kind of individual stories.
Yeah, there weren't enough dirty cops on Hill Street Blues to keep me interested.
That's cool. How about The Untouchables?
The film?
The television show first.
I liked the television show, you know. Just because it was, you know, I'm watching this when I'm, you know, 5, 6 years old. It's black and white. It's larger than life. You know, it's got, you know, it's very seductive to a kid. You know, the older you get and you see it, it's like, eh. It doesn't really hold up, but that won't be part of my DVD collection. And neither will the film.
I can get to the film. Let's see if there's any other. Those are the three major. Was there any other Chicago kind of based television, like crime television, that you outside of those three?
Bozo.
Wizzo was.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Was the enforcer.
They had great makeup. They could have robbed anyone.
If 100 Bullets were to be turned into a movie, and actually I see it also more as like an HBO series. I mean, this to me, especially with these.
Well, you're intelligent. You don't work for Hollywood.
No, really. And you know, DC being part of Time Warner, there hasn't been.
They don't see it as a. It has been optioned as a for a film, and they Warner Brothers does not want to release it as. For HBO.
Interesting.
Yeah. They think it makes it, they want a film franchise. I don't think it's built for a film. But.
No, I see every arc as being half a season. And if they're going to lose The Wire, which I don't want to see them do. What do you think of The Wire?
I love The Wire. I think The Wire is the densest show on television. You have to pay attention. You've got to watch every week. I know it's criticized a lot for that, but then so is 100 Bullets, so there's some sort of simpatico feeling with that. And Pelicanos, I think, is a fantastic writer, too.
Jim True Forrest from Chicago.
Oh,
yeah? Huh. Good guy. Went to high school, great guy. He's a Steppenwolf guy, actually.
Is he?
Yes. Let's talk about The Untouchables movie. Oh. And it's okay. But it is a big movie that certain people have seen, gotten a lot of wrong conclusions about Capone and the reality of what it was covering. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people really like that film.
You know,
some people collect stamps, you know.
From point of living around here, I'm not looking to get you arrested or anything like that. How much direct dealing have you had with the criminal element?
With the criminal element? Enough to have direct dealing with the law enforcement element.
So obviously, you know, so that's good. I mean, in some ways that's good because it gets you a frame of reference for your writing. Okay.
I suppose it's good in some ways. I certainly don't advocate some of it.
Any encounters with people that have a history that goes back to Chicago's crime family days? Which still are in existence, of course, but.
Yeah, not really. No, nobody, you mean like. I work.
Nitty or anybody like
that? No, nothing like that. Yeah. Some low level stuff, but not anybody. You know. I've had encounters with those legendary friends of the friends.
For DC, with 100 Bullets, how much creative input do you have as far as cover ideas? I mean, do you give Dave Johnson free rein after you read the script? How much editorial is involved in what you do? If you want to start with the cover.
Sure, well, Dave calls me a lot about the cover, you know, what to put on the cover. We have...
Look at me, Brad.
Oh, okay. We have pretty much a real autonomous sort of relationship with DC as far as 100 Bullets goes. I mean, we've been doing it for 50 issues now. It just, it runs itself, you know. We've definitely proven, you know, they can trust us. So.
Do you see yourself staying in comic books, or do you see yourself doing novels, or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's probably, you know, the next move is novels.
Was this kind of the transition, going to comic books first, novels to writer?
No. This was just a way to tell a story, you know. What? And I'm very happy working in comics, you know. It's fun.
What drew you to comics, to be honest?
The immediacy of them, you know.
In terms of their release, or?
Yeah. In terms of the release. I read some comics when I was a kid, you know. Was still.
Do you like writing in episodic, you know, kind of that serialized fashion? Or?
Yeah. I like writing that way, you know. Writing long form, too. I mean, it's, you know, like the Sergeant Rock thing, that was more like writing a screenplay. But, you know, 100 Bullets is a novel. Going to be many, many pages by the time it's all done.
Do you have that, like, do you know what, how many arcs? I mean, I know.
You mean, do I have the ending?
Well, no, I know you have. I'm not looking for the ending. But what I do want to know is, and it's going to be 100 issues, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Do you have every arc pretty much done?
I have every important arc done, yeah. Yeah. There's room, there's wiggle room, you know, within there. But the way, you know, I structured this thing is, you know, there's a definite outline. I have the main characters, where they had to be at a certain point in the story, and still a little room in it to improvise. You know, it's like being a quarterback, and you got to be able to audibilize when you get to the line if, you know, you don't like what the defense is throwing at you.
What do you think right now of the crime comic?
Right now?
Resurgence. Yeah, it seems like really since you've come on the scene as well that there've been more crime comic books in there. They seem to be
steadily. I'm glad they're successful. We wouldn't be talking if they weren't. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going on right now. David Lapham's Stray Bullets is a great book. You know, as is Sin City, which is going to be a film. I like Jinx. Goldfish, too, with Bendis did. It's good. There's a lot of, it's funny, there's not really that many books these days that are straight crime, you know. There's a lot of kind of dirtying up superheroes, you know, making them more realistic, but they're still, you know, just because he's got a leather coat on doesn't mean he's not wearing tights underneath it, you know, it's ridiculous.
How is doing Broken City?
Broken City? That was treating Batman's cape like a trench coat.
Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to actually kind of write him as an angry person, you know. And to, you know, it was to have him make mistakes was really fun.
Is there? I know you're writing Superman right now too, and that's more of a Superman story, obviously.
Yeah.
Superman isn't walking around with a trench coat. Kind of is. There's a mystery going on, obviously.
Yeah, but it's still Superman.
Are there DC heroes that you want to give more of a crime treatment to?
No. I'm done with these guys. I'm absolutely done with them.
Getting back to the Bullets.
Yeah. You know, I want to go do Loveless, which is going to be a Western, but it's dealing with the outlaws, not so much with sheriffs, and, you know.
Is there a genre you haven't hit yet that you want to?
No.
You're happy where this is? You're ready to.
Yeah. I mean, romance, I guess. There's been romance stories in 100 Bullets.
Yeah.
They just haven't ended well.
Well, it's the human condition.
Yeah.
These are stories about the human condition. I did want to ask you how much pulp reading you did, and the, you know, let's start with the classics, the Chandlers, the Hammetts, guys like that.
I got to them later than the Thompsons and the Goodises. I kind of started with the with them.
Enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean it's like the Chandler and Hammett were writing detectives. And that wasn't anything that sort of appealed to me, you know.
Yeah.
I liked with Thompson and, you know, Goodis and Bruno Fischer and Woodard were writing, you know, more like the criminals.
How about those men's adventure pulps from the 50s and 60s and 70s? I don't know if you ever really came across any of those. It's really like the lurid covers.
Yeah. I remember the covers like Argosy or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. But there was nothing.
Nothing to grab over.
Well, you know, when they were coming out, I wasn't old enough to buy them.
Yeah. So you mentioned Ann Goodis and Thompson and any other authors come to mind?
Charles Wilford. You know, this, when this question's asked, this always happens. You know.
Yeah.
Currently, I think George Pelicanos is fantastic. I'm a big fan of James Ellroy.
How about Richard Price?
Yeah, I like that stuff too.
Are there movies that you see? Like, are there stories you're saving for movies?
No.
We're getting everything, though.
Yeah. No, well, why say it anything?
And like you said, 100 bullets is the perfect vehicle for all your stories. Do you feel that?
Yeah, oh yeah, right now. You know, other than Loveless, because there's horses involved, and I'm not gonna bring horses into 100 bullets because that was a big mistake in The Untouchables.
From December of 2004, that's Brian Azzarello. Don't forget, coming in October from DC Comics, it's Tales of the Unexpected, featuring stories by David Lappin and Brian's take on Dr. 13, and Deathblow from Wildstorm. Also, look for his great Vertigo titles, Loveless and 100 Bullets. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. If you ever want to email me, feel free, john@wordballoon.com. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2006.